Good evening. We're going live for our broadcast, video broadcast. We welcome those who are also on the telephone with us this evening. I'd like to give you a couple of phone numbers, at least one. If you're on the phone and you have a question as we go through this process tonight, please send a text to 801-541-9181. That's 801-541-9181. And we'll be happy to address your question. If you're live on the video stream, just open up your Ustream account in the chat and send a little message, and I will be here to watch it through the evening and see if I can serve you and answer any questions that you might want to ask. Thank you for being here with us tonight. We love these times, these Tuesday nights when we have people on the phone and people on the video, and we're teaching principles that will improve a person's life. What a great time. I'm just swinging back for a moment to grab my copy of the book, Today I Begin a New Life. We're so excited how this thing is turning out. We're in our second printing. Just had a call a few moments ago with those who have bought 10 copies of the book, who are able to attend a special section where I'm actually going through the book a chapter at a time. If anybody wants to participate in that call as well, you can just go online to augmandino.com and click on the book and purchase the 10 copies. You'll have 9 to give to friends, 1 to keep for yourself, and you can have some free coaching as I walk through this with this book, because this is a critical part of what we're teaching. The book does not go as deep as we went into our coaching together in the fact that the book covers the first 3 qualities of an intentional creator connection, mental creation and physical creation. Lots of stories and explanations to assist us in better understanding these principles. And then in our coaching together, we go deeper. We're going into discipline and structure, and then into joy in the journey, and ultimately self-esteem, to go just a little bit deeper. It's good to have you here. These Tuesday nights are just a precious part of our week. We're looking forward to being with you next week. Next week, the broadcast is going to be coming from my laptop in Wisconsin. Do you remember the city we're going to? I was asking Ramona if she knew. We're flying into, I want to say Monroe, and driving a couple of hours up to a financial conference. And I'll be keynoting there on Wednesday morning and then again on Friday morning. So Tuesday night we'll be coming live to you via the laptop computer. I understand the picture's not quite as good as this, but we're going to do it live nonetheless. So it'll be great to be with you on location up there. Now, last week we talked about physical creation, and as part of that physical creation, we talked about power sessions. Power sessions are blocks of time when we are fully present in the now. I've got several coaching groups right now and clients that are working through this specific part. It's very interesting. 3 groups are all doing it about the same time, going through this section on power sessions. It's so fun to see people grasp this concept and take it and run with it and start to experience the miracles that can only occur when our mind and our body is wedded in the same place. We don't spend a whole lot of time here in physical, tangible reality in our mind. Our mind is usually elsewhere. We want to rein it in, bring it in here with us, and bring all of its power and our physicality, our physical body, into the same place and focus on the task at hand. Og said, I'll focus all my energy on the task at hand, and my actions will help me forget all else. This is a great place for us to be, because this is where we bring the vision and the effort into the same place, and we begin the process of physical creation. This is the work of creation. Interestingly enough, when we are here, we are not alone. We're in partnership with a power greater than ourselves, and that power helps us to magnify our gifts and talents. If we're fully using the gifts we've been given, we're endowed with more. People are put on our path who can serve us and who we can serve. This is a miraculous place to be. What we have discovered, I'm hoping you've discovered as we've gone through this process for the last week, is that there are a lot of thoughts. They're called systemic thoughts. They get in the way of us taking this action. Now we got our mind here. It's not wandering all over in fantasy catastrophe. Now there's something else showing up. We're zeroing in on our real enemy. enemies. Now, these are powerful thought processes, but used destructively, again, they're going to create some challenges. Each one of these thought processes have both a shadow side and a good side. I'm going to walk through them with you. They're in your assessment. Turn to your assessment. Go to augmandino.com. Scroll down to the left-hand side where it says member login. Click on that member login. Put in your email address and your password that you selected, and then you'll be right there at your assessment results. We now have the assessment results organized by quality. So the bottom left-hand side is the quality of being disciplined and structured. This is a great quality. And we have some serious challenges in this from a negative perspective and some very powerful possibilities because of these thought processes. Many of them are out of balance. When they're out of balance, you've got to be really careful because some of them can really cause challenges. I'm going to walk through them with you. The first measurement is disciplined. The question that gets asked is this. From an intrinsic perspective, a deep appreciation and respect, how do our thought processes feel about rules and policies and procedures? If you and I step back and we looked at this measurement, we said, okay, tell us how you feel about the rules. This measurement might say to us, well, I like the rules as long as they make sense. That's very entrepreneurial. 99.5% of the people who are seeking success, they want to create more with their life, have a measurement of discipline that's orange. It just means that it's thinking outside the box. It wants to be creative. It wants to be have freedom. It wants to have a certain amount of autonomy, decision-making power. The risk is that it's going to resist when anybody tries to impose structure. Now, last week I talked about power sessions. I wasn't attempting to impose them on you, but this thought process may have reacted that way. You may have found yourself this last week in tremendous resistance. Now you know where it's coming from. This gift that helps you to be independent, to think outside the box, to be creative, the shadow side, it's going to resist anything that isn't its idea. Anytime I try to impose something, or even you try to impose something on that thought process, it's going to go into resistance, even rebellion. So just know that. That's the price we pay for the creativity. The price we pay is to learn how to manage the resistance. That's it. So we learn to manage the resistance, so we've got the gift of the creativity. Now the next measurement, teachable. This particular measurement is asking, how do our thought processes feel about authority figures? People in positions of authority, especially when they want to use that authority to force us to do something a certain way. Now, most of you have a green measurement here. Some of you have an orange, and a couple of you have reds. Just know that when it goes from green to orange to red, there's an increasing resistance to someone in a position of authority telling us what to do. If it's red, there's generally a story behind this measurement. That story generally tells us of a time when we were being controlled by someone who was in a position of authority, a parent, an abusive spouse, whoever it might have been, a boss. And we just promised ourselves, if I can ever get out of this, I will never allow this to ever happen again. And we have broken free. Or we're wanting to break free. If you have this measurement, it's probably important, if it's orange or red, that you be in a profession where you have a fair amount of flexibility and control over your outcome. If it's red and you're working for someone who doesn't know what they're doing, it's going to be very hard to bite your tongue. The shadow side of this is going to feel so strongly about being in resistance and how wrong they are that we'll probably say something at the peril of you losing a job. You could get fired. Just know that. We want to learn to manage this shadow side. Entrepreneurs do not value position. the district manager. He's an idiot. I mean, that's kind of the feeling. The fact he's a district manager doesn't mean I give him respect. I give him respect as an entrepreneur because of the value that he brings. It's value, contribution, and not title. This is entrepreneurial. It's okay. That's what entrepreneurs are like. But entrepreneurs must learn and will want to learn how to manage the shadow side, which is the natural resistance to authority. We throw the baby out with the bathwater. Someone starts to say something to us, and based on how they say it, or what they're saying, or who is saying it, we become instantly resistant and we shut off our ears. We throw out the baby, the value, with the bathwater. We don't hear the value in what's being shared. Let us manage this by consciously saying, no matter who says it or how it's said, I'm going to glean it for value. I'm going to glean it for value because I'm here to hear the message, not the messenger. That's the teachable measurement, entrepreneurial. The next one is analytical. Analytical is orange about 97% of the time in the population that we coach with. So all of those of you who have now joined us in these live broadcasts, this is a measurement that tells us how much time you spend thinking about thinking about thinking about thinking. What do you do to shut off your mind? What do you do? I've heard all kinds of things, from mindless television to I drink, exercise, listen to music, all kinds of things we do. Generally, when someone has an orange or red measurement in analytical, they have a strategy for shutting this down. Now, I want you to picture a Mustang, a wild Mustang, running on the open plain. You have managed to saddle it, and you've climbed in the saddle. And so as long as you can stay in the saddle, you're there for the ride. And that horse will run forever. Now, if you decide you want to get off, you never get off. You just get to step down and be dragged along the ground with your one foot in the stirrup. That's when we're in resistance, because it doesn't stop. It obsessively thinks about something. As one client once said to me, I just had to give it a different bone to chew on. We want to be thinking constructively. We talked about that in mental creation. We're in mental rehearsal, inspiration, exploration, planning, goal setting, problem solving. We're going to want to consciously engage in one of those activities when it's starting to spin out of control. The way we manage this is we become highly aware that it's going into a fantasy state or it's going into catastrophe. We're going to stop it. Or it's spinning on a problem for which there is no solution. We want to redirect it. We can't stop it. We redirect it. We can anesthetize it with television or go read a book or something, but we can't stop it. It's going to be chewing on something. So let us make sure it's chewing on something that is positive. This is an enormous gift, this ability to effortlessly think, effortlessly. Just be prepared that if you're in a job where you ask people to do research and come back and report to you, that there may be times when they come back after a couple of weeks of research and begin to share what they have learned, that you will know in the first 5 minutes three or four things they did not look at, places they did not go that are critical to the analysis. And then you'll know the difference between someone who effortlessly thinks and someone who thinks and it's a chore. If you have a vision of walking down a coal mine that has multiple shafts, you're going to be like water being poured down the shaft. It's going to go into every nook and cranny. Nothing's sacred. Everything's going to be explored effortlessly, like water flowing into the mine shaft. However, somebody else is going to walk in. They're going to be much like someone with a flashlight. They're going to look down that side. It doesn't look like there's anything down there, okay? Nope, that looks pretty clear over there. And it's going to turn out that that's where the information was you needed, or that was the answer to the problem. They just didn't even go down. It was too much work. So instead of being angry with someone who doesn't think effortlessly, let us treasure the gift. If nothing else, their research can be a catalyst to help us engage at a higher level and solve the problem quicker. The Let's not look at it as a deficit on their part, but a gift on ours. Then methodical. Methodical is a measurement that says, how stuck do we get on our ideas? Because one of the great risks of thinking and thinking and thinking is we get attached to our ideas. When we get attached to them, we're going to need to be right. Now, some people say, I don't need to be right. And I say, well, how do you feel about things where you really are passionate about it? Well, I need to be right about those. Well, that's the ones we're talking about. When we feel really strongly about something, how easy is it for us to let it go? Do we just keep pursuing it and pursuing it and pursuing it until we smother people or crush people? This is a great thing for us to discover. And methodical is an indication of how open we are to someone else's ideas. Are we absolutely closed? Are we too open? Get into trouble? Are we balanced in this area? Consistent. This is a question of what happens when we're doing and we're thinking, and schedules and doing gets in the way. I'll give you an example. I want you to just write down on a piece of paper, just write down a big ugly. A big ugly is something you've been putting off and you haven't wanted to do. You've just been putting it off. I had a few of those. It's like next Saturday. It's going to be painting the doors of the cabin right downstairs. How long have we been putting this off? We've been putting it off. So next Saturday, this will be on the schedule. First thing in the morning, I'll wake up and go down and paint the doors. Now, what is yours? Just put something down, whatever it is. See, Saturday's a safe enough time. It's a long way till Saturday, right? So it's safe enough, but yet it's close enough that we can feel really good about the fact it's on the schedule, so we don't need to be beat up by it anymore. We're not procrastinating. It's on the schedule. So we could let go of all the guilt and shame. Yet it's safe enough because it's far enough away. And then Wednesday comes, and then Thursday comes, and then Friday comes. Can you feel the anxiety start to build? We get to Saturday morning at 6 o'clock. We wake up at 6:30, and we got to get up and get going. And just know this measurement, quite often called consistent, will talk us out of our own plan. It will give us several of the really critical things that ought to be. I can tell you Saturday morning, one of the ones I'll deal with and overcome is it's been a very long week. I am physically exhausted, and I just need to unwind. Ramona's even writing it down. She just knows that's going to show up, and I'll need to remind myself that, no, we're going to do this because it's going to feel so good when it's done, and we can put it to rest. Just listen. This thought process is going to say, oh, move the laundry from the washing machine to the dryer before it gets wrinkled. Or, oh, I need to call Mom. She's been sick, and I haven't touched base with her. Or, you know, if I just clean up my desk and get it more organized, I'll have a clearer mind. This thought process can come up with a million reasons why you should not be deeply engaged right now. And lastly is loyal. This is about the intrinsic devaluation of structure. If we're supervising someone or we have children, how do we feel about the rules? Are we like chopping people's toes off? This way, one, two, three, or it's over, just crash, crash, crash. Or are we too lenient? And people really don't know what the boundaries are. Or are we balanced? This would be a great measurement to know. So those are the six measurements that govern discipline and structure. This quality, this great quality of being disciplined and structured. We want to be creative. We want to be autonomous, have independence. Those attracted to this phone call would fit that category. We want to be able to effortlessly think. We do want to be open to other people's ideas. We do want to keep our schedules, our structure, and we do want to be able to administer rules appropriately. And so we go into this process. I'm going to share with you some ideas tonight to assist us in dealing with these thought processes so that the best in them can come out and the most challenging can be better managed. There's a story in the book. It's actually found in Mental Creation. I moved it up because I wanted it in the book. It's a story that I wrote sitting right here looking right in this computer screen writing about a thing I called the House of Horrors. these systemic thoughts that are just so wild and crazy and undisciplined, swirling in this attic, which is really a metaphor for our mind. And we want to step in and take control. Stop. Stop this. These thought processes are so powerful that they cause the release of molecules in our body, and we actually feel them. And when we feel a thought, we're attached to, we think, this is who we are, this is who I am. And it's not true. It's not true. Let's just understand better what a systemic thought means. So system with an ick on the end, systemic thought. They're very unusual. They're very different than all of the other thought processes that we have. Systemic thoughts process dualistically. Dualistically. It's like a computer, ones and zeros. That's computer programming, just ones and zeros. It's either or. There's no one and a half. There's no two and a quarter. It's one or it's a zero, period. It is all or it is nothing. It is life or it is death. It is black or white. It's life. I think I've said them all. Close enough. It's dualistically. Now, if you're on the screen with me, you can see my two hands. It's like polar opposites. There's nothing in between. There's no Pantone color scale. There's no gradation of gray. It is either or. One or the other. There's no compromise. There's no negotiation. That's a different kind of thought process. That's in the next grouping up. There's no intrinsic value in the pricelessness of a human being. There's nothing about human beings in there. There's nothing about doing. It's just ideas, right, wrong, win, lose, life, death, all, nothing. That's just how they process. Now, if we are run by these thought processes, we also will want to know that mathematically, they're important. But they are less important than thought processes about practical judgment and doing tasks. They're less important than thinking about people. And the world, frankly, has been turned upside down. Systemic thoughts rule a lot of the time. Policies, procedures, right, wrong, win, lose, life, death. Welcome. Life, death, that's just where we're living. Ramona needed a tissue. She was sneezing. Bless your heart, sweetheart. When we're in this process of these dualistic thought processes, we are thinking in the lowest mathematical level. Things are higher. People are even higher than this. But yet, reversed, it's the right, wrong, black, white that runs the day. It controls how we do what we do. And the people that do it. It's a tragedy. It's important that we turn this around. Intrinsically validating a person is the most important thing we can do on this planet. Having someone feel understood. Having passion for what we're doing is next. And then come these rules. Let's not let them run our life, even though they are so powerful. I once said to a client, you know, that we get this right-wrong battle. And we could blow up a marriage based on what's the correct topping for a pizza. And she responded with a smile. Actually, for us, it was a bagel. Just a sweetheart of a person, and so fun to see their relationship so healthy. But it's so easy for us when these thought processes are dominant to have them show up. We get strongly held opinions, and we need to be right about it. And what we don't know is this, come now, that 95% of the population, which is virtually everyone, they cannot separate their idea from their self-worth. They are inextricably connected. I just interwove my fingers and squeezed my palms together, intertwined my fingers, squeezed my palms together. My left hand represents my idea, my right hand my self-worth. They're inextricably connected. We cannot point out the flaw in someone's idea without pointing out the flaw in them. We don't have to point flaws in them. By pointing out the flaw in the idea to them, we just point out flaws is in them. In other words, when we need to be right, someone else not only needs to be wrong, they need to be crushed. Gosh, I just had a strong impression. I'll just be with this for a moment. This somebody who's listening tonight has heard this a few times, and yet it hasn't quite settled in. Hasn't quite settled in. I'm working with a couple whose marriage will not survive. It won't. Because neither one of them are willing to let go of this. They just believe so strongly that they're right. And truth is, both of them are right, but so what? So what? Because in needing to be right, the other person feels crushed, feels trapped, feels smothered. If you're in a relationship, and this has been part of your life, I'm going to just encourage you with all of my heart to let this one go. Go back into looking for the good, the principles of intrinsic validation. Look for the good. Step into their world. Listen. You see, a systemic thought is it's got to fix what's broken. It has got to fix what's broken. Everybody got that? Because the world's on tilt. It's all or it's nothing. It's right or it's wrong. It sees it so clearly, it needs to make sure the person gets it. It can't just listen. See, that's an intrinsic thought. That's the highest level of thought, is just to listen. And when someone's done sharing and they feel understood, we just simply say, thanks for sharing. They say, well, what do you think I should do? We might respond, would you like my ideas or would you prefer I just listen? That's the highest level of thought. The lowest level is I hear it and I need to fix it. They are broken and I know the solution. This drives people crazy when this thought process is running the day. May we please, I'm going to give you a practice here in a moment. Some of you have heard it before, but I'm going to encourage you to do it like you have never done it. And may you find the blessings that come from doing so. Because if you live in a world where you need to be right and fix people, you'll be in a very lonely world. Because people just don't like it. You don't like it when people try to do it to you. All kinds of buttons get pushed in self-esteem. When someone tries to do it to you, remember how it feels? They question my worth. They question my ability. They question my belief systems. I mean, how dare they? It's just an idea. But we can't separate it. We certainly shouldn't expect someone else to do likewise. So here's the practice. Very simple practice. I want you to find the person who is most adversely impacted by your need to be right. You should be able to find them relatively easily. Now, some of you on the phone going, this isn't my issue. That's okay if it's not your issue. Just hang in here with me for a minute while I share it with those who have this issue. We're going to want to ask that person if we can have a conversation with them in private. And the conversation sounds like this. What's it like to be in a relationship with me when I need to be right? Not when I am right, when I need to be right. What's it been like to be in a relationship with me? You could add for 26 years, for 12 months, whatever it might be, when I need to be right. And then just lean in and listen. Be prepared. This can be a tough exercise on our self-esteem, because our self-esteem may get its buttons pushed. Our systemic buttons may get pushed. Someone may say, well, you know, last Tuesday when we were talking and you said this to me, and we're going, that's not what I said, at least that's not what I meant, And I just got so frustrated about that because of this and this and this, and we're going, but that's not what I was trying to say. That's not what I want to do. Ah! And we just say, stop. This isn't about us. This is intrinsic validation at its highest level. We are asking them, what is their experience when we need to be right? And let us not try to be right in the middle of the question. It's not a matter of whether we're right or wrong. It's just their experience of us when we need to be right. Just listen. The only thing we're going to be allowed to say is, tell me more about that. Or share with me what you're thinking. Or is there anything else you'd like to share? And we want to be careful that that's with a friendly tone. It's not, is there anything else I'd like to share? You might beat the crap out of me. Have some fun with this. This could be the most amazing experience you'll have with another human being ever. Well, there's some fun things it could do besides this, but just in terms of conversation. I've had so many emails come back expressing gratitude and sharing their experience. If there could be tear stains on emails, there would have been on these. Huge breakthrough. Full of agenda, always needing to be right. One person recently said, it's been my machete with which I have cut people into shreds. What a sobering discovery. Wow. How long have we been like this? What has it done to our relationships? And what could be different if we let this go? When the person gets done sharing, all we're going to say is, thank you for sharing. I'm going to be working on that one. Now, you're going to want to write on a piece of paper somewhere where you can see it. 12 to 24 hours. Put up in the mirror in the bathroom, someplace you know what it means, nobody else needs to. It just simply means that if this person has pushed a systemic button, this obsessive thought process is not going to be able to let it go. It won't. It's going to chew on it and chew on it and chew on it. You're going to create all kinds of stories about it, all kinds of feelings about it. You can even have hurt feelings about it. It's just crazy what we do. We step back from this and we say, shut up. I love this person more than needing to be right about last Tuesday night. I love this person more than needing to be right about their misunderstanding. I love this person more than my idea. We just let it go. Otherwise, we're going to find ourselves approaching that person like a spouse and putting arms around them late one night and saying, you know, sweetheart, I really enjoyed our conversation. It's the best we've ever had. And, you know, there's only one thing. You know, you mentioned on Tuesday night, and I just feel so bad that you had to carry those feelings for all those days. Can you hear the passive aggressive? Because, you know, that's really not what I meant. What I meant was, and all I'm saying is, smack, you were wrong and I was right. I just had to fix that. I couldn't stand that to be unfixed. It was more important that I crush you about our experience than to love you and let it go. That's all we're saying. Let's not do that. Let it go. Just let it go. A couple weeks from now, let's check back in. How am I doing? How am I doing? You could take so much pressure off of a relationship by exercising this. Now, I know I can be pushing buttons while I'm sharing it. There can be one of these thought processes screaming, who in the crap do you think you are, Mr. Blanchard? I could hear all kinds of things coming from these thought processes. Not perhaps yours, but some that could be coming. But let's just recognize it for what it is and step back and go, wow, do I really want to be crushing people? Because every time I go here, I do. That's the first piece. Now, one more practice. The next practice is a practice of looking for the good in their idea. Now, you're in the coaching sessions. You've heard this. But I'm going to repeat it because this is one I have to keep consciously practicing. You see, when we have a really strong idea, a way we'd like to have it done, it's not just an idea anymore. Our mind has created what the neuroscientists call a mental construct. We've actually constructed it in our mind. It's done. To change it is like changing history. You can't change history. Well, you and I can step back and go, but it's not done. We haven't done it yet. Yes, But we're so fixed on the idea, it's like changing history. So now we know the situation. Here we are, not wanting to change history on this idea of what we're going to do tomorrow, and someone across the table from us has a different idea. What do we do? Do we crush them? What we know is every time we need to be right, all we're doing is pushing their systemic buttons, and they need to be right. We put up a wall, they put up a bigger one. We put up a bigger one, they put up an even bigger one. There is a way to do this. It's so counterintuitive to anything we've ever learned. But it's understanding a secret principle. Remember Og said the greatest secret of success in all ventures is love, agape love, a heightened level of awareness. It is being aware of how this law works, and this law says, if you can find something good in that person's idea, you don't have to agree with it, just find something good in it, it's tantamount or equal to finding something good in them. When they feel valued, they feel safe. Their walls can come down. And when their walls come down, their cooperation and productivity flood out. Now, this thought process might still be screaming, I'm not going to do it. I am not going to do it. They're going to think I agree with them, and I won't get my way, and my way is the highway, and I'm going to do it this way, and that's just the end of it. Can you feel the energy from this thought process? It is willing to crush the person and violate the highest law of success. The greatest secret of success is willing to violate it to be right about its idea. Well, it's just an idea. We can step back from it and say, thank you for your input. But I'm going to choose to find something good in their idea. This is not going to stop screaming. Oh, okay. Sorry, I didn't understand what you meant. It's not going to do that. This thought process is going to keep screaming. And we're going to step back, and we're going to start looking. I've shared the discussion of avocado trees. It's still vivid to me coming off the back porch of our house on Shadow Road and looking up at that avocado tree that was just outside. And I know there are avocados there, but I can't see any. And I'm looking and looking and looking, and I really have to focus. And then finally we see one, just one. And the instant we see one, we all of a sudden see a whole tree full of avocados. Where did they come from? We couldn't see them. The same is true when we look for something good in a person's idea and acknowledge it. What I like best about your idea is, and this starts to have less and less control, this systemic thought starts to lose control. Our eyes open to possibilities. Don't be surprised to find many good ideas. Many good ideas. The more we're willing to find, the safer it becomes, the more the walls come down. I'd like best about that idea is this. What would you think if we took that and we added this to it? Oh, yeah, then we could do this. Yeah, then we could do this. And all of a sudden, we're all on the same team solving a problem instead of in a battle. What I like best about your idea is, now you can use this in small groups, 3 or 4 or 5 people. If you're the leader, and let's say for an example, we have Laura and Lane and Ty in the room, we would walk in with an agenda. We take the first agenda item, discuss it. This is our agenda. We need to solve this challenge. Turn to Laura. Laura, what would you do? And while Laura is speaking, you're writing down the ideas she's sharing. When she gets done, you turn to Lane and say, Lane, what did you like best about Laura's idea? He'll come up with something. Write it down. Ty, what did you like best? Okay, thank you. Great. Lane, what do you think we should do? If he has some more ideas in addition to, he'll share them. Then we turn to Ty, what did you like best? And then we turn to Laura, what did you like best? They share, we write them. Lastly, we go to Ty, what do you think we should do? When everybody's shared and everybody has expressed what they like best about a person's idea, we get to be the last to share. We may discover the ideas that have been presented are even better than ours, or ours was covered by them. Great leaders don't need to have all the answers. Great leaders know how to pull the best out of their people and then give them credit for it. This is a great leader. Some leaders think they're foolish or stupid or weak if they don't have all the answers. No. Leaders are there to lead, and part of leading is pulling the best out of their people, this tremendous asset they have before them, to find the very best ideas. If there is something additional, you could say, well, the only thing I could add to that is this and this. What did you like best about that, Laura, Lane, Ty? Okay, let's take these and let's put together a plan. And when the plan is done, everybody has ownership in the plan. This is called affiliate leadership, according to Dan Goldman when he wrote Primal Leadership. One of the four resonant ways of leading, having consensus, and someone then can go execute their part instead of us pushing a rope or a wet noodle. They're pulling that piece, and that person's pulling that piece, and that person's pulling that piece. The CEOs that come back and say they've done this with their executive teams report they've had the very best meeting they've ever had, and so do their people. They feel a sense of ownership, participation. What I like best about your idea. Well, there's one more piece tonight. This particular series of thought processes, all, nothing, right, wrong, win, lose, life, death, there is nothing funny going on here. They do not have a funny bone. When you can blow up a marriage based on the topping of a pizza, it's pretty serious. Pepperoni is the answer. No, sausage is the answer. No, pepperoni is... There's nothing funny about whether it's pepperoni or sausage when this thought process is in play. We want to step back and reawaken our funny bone. We're going to want to get our funny back. Let's get our funny back. I share a story in the material in your Intentional Creation Studio of the wedding of our daughter and standing to speak. It was at the end of our 10 years of paying back $1 million. It was brutal at the time. And I was finally relieved. I just, sense of relief. So I was relaxed. And Christina was hilarious. Still is. So I was telling about Christina's life. And I was laughing. Everyone else was laughing. And I got down. I'm walking down to our table. And my oldest son stood up and welcomed me with open arms and gave me a kiss on the cheek and whispered in my ear, "Dad, it's good to have your funny back." And I wondered then how long it had been since my children had seen me laugh. It had been so dead serious. Those who can laugh in the middle of a firestorm are going to be healthy. They're going to keep it in proper perspective. It's going to help them to stay in intentional creation. And as Og said, man's most comical when he can't laugh at himself. Let us never let our cot grow too long. Or let us grow too long for our cot, I should say. We want to be able to laugh at life. This too shall pass, as Og says in scroll number 7. Let us get our funny back. So, this week, as you're practicing these principles, just know they're going to want to resist structure. They're going to want to resist authority. They're going to fight. The very first thing you're going to want to do this week is read scroll number 6 3 times a day. I'll be the master of my emotions. Let it feed your soul. Trees and plants depend on the weather, but yea, I carry my weather with me. If I bring rain and gloom and doom and pessimism, we want to consciously choose to act differently. We're going to consciously choose to think differently. How we think causes molecules to be released in our body that control how we feel. How we feel controls how we act. How we act control our results. That's when Og said, "Weak is he who allows his thoughts to control his actions. Strong is he who forces his actions to control his thoughts." We are going to change the way we think consciously, intentionally, before the forces of evil and despair take us over. And yes, there will be days, Og says in the scroll, when we must constantly struggle against forces that would tear us down. Yes, that's going to be true. But let us constantly struggle. Let us fight these urges to be tornadoes and hurricanes and all this craziness that we can be when these thought processes are running our life. Let us choose to be in control of them. Let's go to the attic and say, stop it. Just stop it. And one of the ways we're going to do this is reading this scroll three times a day. Can you feel it? We're going to pose structure on these thought processes. If we have been, continue reading. If you haven't, this is your opportunity to take on these voices and say, shut up. I want to feed my soul. I want to be conscious and awake and aware to take on my life, to maximize everything in my life every moment of every day. Shut up. I'm going to read this, or I'm going to listen to it. That's the first thing. Number two, we're going to sit down with that person who's been adversely impacted when we need to be right. What's it been like to be in a relationship with me for ever so long when I need to be right? Third, we're going to start looking for the good in other people's ideas. Consciously have a moment with at least one or two people and have a conscious moment with a group. What I like best about your ideas, what did you like best about that idea? Draw people into that conversation. And lastly, do something this week that's funny. Watch a funny movie. Get into a pillow fight with someone that you love. Just do something that makes you laugh spontaneously. We had a couple moments like that this weekend. It was just delightful to just laugh at a point that it makes your fingertips tingle. That's so healthy. It helps bleed off all the cortisol and the fear dendrites in our body, which means it opens up our mind to clarity. We regain our perspective. We don't make something bigger than it already is. That just makes it worse than it needs to be. Let's get our funny back. And let's have the very best week of our life as we take on these thought processes. This will free us to connect with people and to listen. This will free us to use our mind constructively. This will free us to be in passion-driven action in our power sessions. We'll actually be able to execute the power sessions because these thought processes we will be intentionally shutting off. This is the week of becoming the master of our thoughts and therefore the master of our emotions. Well, thanks for being with us tonight. It's been great to be here. So fun on these Tuesday nights, and it's so fun to be here with my sweetheart, Ramon. We just had a wonderful weekend with our children decorating graves yesterday. I do hope you had a wonderful Memorial Day as well. We wish you the best this week. Take this on like you never have before. Choose that today I begin a new life. And let's come back next Tuesday night to again celebrate life. Thanks, everyone.